Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 29th of Iyar. With thanks to you, to Rabbi Jacob Ronowitz, and to David Hochhauser for helping us put these shiurim and making online and making them available to you, we will start a discussion of a tshuva in Yabia Omer. Shu Yabia Omer, Chelek Zion, the 7th volume, the Choshen Mishpat section, Simon Dalid, the 4th response. It's from the 29th of Iyar of Tavshin Mem of 1980. It was about an appeal between a husband and a wife, an ex-husband and wife, and unfortunately divorce issues often get complicated, but today's divorce issue isn't really a divorce issue, it's a jurisdictional issue, and therefore in getting into that, it's really a fundamental baiting question that will come up. It's two Jerusalem residents who had been married for a while, and they had children, and then they got divorced, and there was a get, and everything that happened, and all that happened in a Beit Din in Yerushalayim. But then the woman has three kids, and now she's sort of a single mother. The father probably has visitation rights or whatever, but she's basically a single mother, and he has obligations of support, so she went back to live in Haifa near her parents. So, and the husband has to pay support, and over time, whatever the support was, over the time, he wanted to appeal the support award. He thought he was paying too much. He wanted to pay less for support. So you have to have a court case about you, right? You have to go to Beit Din, and he can say what he's going to say, and she'll say what she's going to say, and they'll have a Beit Din. Problem is, he submitted his appeal. He submitted his claims to the Beit Din in Yerushalayim that had been the Beit Din before whom they had their original dealings in terms of the divorce, that had made the original findings, which makes sense. There's a real implication here that I can see in the tshuva that he's trying to put anything over on her. He has an issue. Now, I have to say, whenever you decide you have to go to court, it means you had an issue, you raised with the other person wasn't willing to give in or wasn't willing to come to some compromise, which may, and I don't mean to judge that, it may be that one side or the other is being completely unreasonable. That's why the other side felt they couldn't make any compromise. It could be they're both being unreasonable. I have no idea. It could be that he's trying to cut down on her on his child support, and she's already struggling. I have no idea of all the background of that. My only point was that there's nothing in the tshuva that says that he was choosing the Beit Din in Yerushalayim because he felt confident they would give him a better answer than he's going to get from somebody else. What she says is, at least what she says, again, what she says explicitly, it could be that she's thinking to herself, I think the Beit Din Yerushalayim gave me a raw deal, and I think that I'll get a better deal out of Beit Din Haifa. What she says is, she's got little kids. To get to Yerushalayim, particularly if she doesn't have a car, is a couple of hours each way, at least a couple of hours each way, right? So she doesn't have the time to be spending 2 hours each way to get to a court case in Yerushalayim, and she wants to have the court case be in front of a Beit Din, in front of a rabbinical court in Haifa. But the same thing is true for him. He doesn't want to have to go to Haifa. It's 2 hours each way or more, and he doesn't want to have to spend the time. So the local court in Yerushalayim, right, the district court, basically the court that's handling this, the Beit Din that's handling this in Yerushalayim, they thought about it, there's two sides. And their psak was that she's right, that the court case should be in Haifa, and they based it on a Rama in Choshen Mishpat, who was following a response of the Maharik Kulon, of the Maharik, as he's known, that in general, if somebody is suing somebody else for money, in this case it's not so much for money, it's a little bit for money, but it's about other stuff too, but the person who's doing the suing, the plaintiff, has to go to the place of the defendant, and the Maharik had said that would be true even if the place of the plaintiff is where there was a better Beit Din or the bigger Beit Din. Now, we're not going to get into it here because it doesn't come up in the response, but there are Gemaras that seem to say that somebody's allowed to ask for a Beit Din Yafeh. Somebody wants to say we need to go to the central Beit Din of our region, and there, because that's a Beit Din Yafeh, then we should be allowed to do that. And I just came across in another context, I also write up, I've just started a project of writing up summaries of some ideas that you find in Ramban on Ala Torah. So one of them that I came across was that when Moshe Rabbeinu calls the Jews, when he speaks of the Jews of Torchachem, of your Torah, of your burden, so the Ramban suggested that when people saw they were about to lose a court, where they were worried they were going to lose a court case, they would insist on a court having five judges rather than three judges, and that's harder to find, and it makes the whole process more difficult. But the Ramban thought that was an actual halakhic right, because you're allowed to choose the better Beit Din in general, if you can get a better justice out of it. This Tshuva of the Maharik, and we're not going to get into all the background, but this Tshuva of the Maharik held that that's not true in his times, in our times, that we say that the plaintiff has to go to where the defendant is, where the defendant wants to have the court case happen. The father is now appealing that decision to Rav Yosef's Beit Din, and wants the court case to be in the local court in Yerushalayim, where they had all of their other decisions. So now Rav Yosef says that the Ramah's psak is a psak that was followed not only by the Ramah. I mean, you might have argued, well, the Ramah, he's an Ashkenazi. We are Sephardi. We don't follow the Ashkenazi's psak. So the first thing is he says, no, it's not true, because there are many Sephardi Achronim who accept this psak of the Ramah as well. There's the Maharival, the Rav Yudah Ibn Leib, I think it is. The Mabit, the Maharashtam, there are lots of Sephardi Achronim who accepted this idea. In the Shulam Mabit, at the end of the Tshuva, says Rav Yosef, he writes that Rav Yosef Karo and other scholars of the time, Chatnu v'Hiskimu, they all agreed to this as well. And Knesset Gedola also has a response where he says this as well. Knesset Gedola says that he derived from a Rashba that we don't need to look at, but the Rashba also had this idea that the custom that supports their custom in Constantinople, that all the places that he knows of, that the plaintiff has to go to where the defendant is, other than in Western lands. He knew of some places where people didn't do that, but that was the general custom. That's the general psak. And Rav Yosef, as is his wont, adds another whole list of people who agreed. So that would all seem to say, you know, the Beit Din in Jerusalem got it absolutely right. The plaintiff has to follow the defendant. That's just the way it goes. He's got to go to Haifa if he wants to get the money out of her. And there's more to be said, according to Rav Yosef. He says, if you look more carefully at the Maharashtam, the case that he was talking about was where the business deal that went bad or that has a court case attached to it is where each one of them did business in their own place, but they were partners in some way or they had an interaction in some way. But if they're both in one place and then the Nidva, the defendant, decides to move, meaning if at the, and this is a kind of an issue that comes up in any legal system whatsoever, right? If you have two people doing business in New York and the corporations involved were registered in New York, although I don't know if any corporation registered in New York anymore, and then one of the parties decided to move to Texas just for whatever reason and says, listen, you want to sue me? You got to come down to Texas to sue me. So that's not so clear at all, right? The case that we were saying before where the plaintiff has to follow the defendant is we have a plaintiff in New York and a defendant in Texas, and the plaintiff in New York and the guy in Texas were doing business with each other and something went wrong. So there, the halacha seems pretty clear that the toveya follows the nidba, that the plaintiff follows the defendant in terms of finding a venue for jurisdiction. But if they did all of the cases in New York and all of the interaction with New York, or in this case in Yerushalayim, and then one of them decided to move to Haifa, that shouldn't be the problem of the other one. And Rav Yosef has another whole list of people who I'm just going to skip over, who I skipped over in excerpting this Tshuva for presentation, that say that, yeah, that's right, that whenever they're together to begin with, the fact that one of them later moved doesn't change where you'd have the court case when the court case came up. If that would be true, since this couple, their whole marriage was in Jerusalem, they got married in Jerusalem, they spent their marriage in Jerusalem, they had their children in Jerusalem, and they had their court case, they had their Beit Din about the divorce and the setting up the divorce in Yerushalayim. So you would think that if another issue comes up about the support of the children, which is all part of this original court case that we had before, you'd think you go to Yerushalayim. And he said that himself, he said before, earlier in Yabia Omer, he said, now I see that Moshe Feinstein, Igros Moshe, has the same idea. So, in general, he would think that would be true, right? If a couple is married in one place, and they've had their whole married life in that place, and then after the marriage breaks up, one of the parties decides to move, that in general, that would mean that the court case would be in the place where they lived originally during the time of the marriage. However, here he thinks that the woman has a better claim. And the claim is, now, in watching this, we're going to have to think about underlying halachic attitudes a little bit, because she's going to make a claim that is going to be appealing to Rav Yosef, that he's going to find justified, but his sourcing for it is not going to be as strong. And some of it, to me, says that he thought of it as an excellent claim, but there's a judgment call here. Her claim is she's dealing with little kids, meaning let's say she only had teenagers, right? The husband doesn't file this court case on the level of support until he gets to be teenagers. And he says, you know, now that they're teenagers, she can go out to work, and therefore I shouldn't have to support as much, whatever his claim would be. So if they're teenagers and she's going to be away overnight, well, she could leave them overnight for a day, right? Or they go off to school all day. And so it's the fact that she's caring for little children. That means, and she doesn't have a convenient way to leave them when she leaves the city, and she can't leave them alone. So there's more to his claims, but if we just think about those claims, think about the situation. She moved to Haifa to be near her parents. So theoretically, you could say, well, let her parents take care of them. So now maybe you'll tell me, well, the parents are too old or too inconvenient. So let her get a sitter for them. Right? So some underlying element of all this is, in 1980, Rav Avdia Yosef is very accepting of the idea that if she's their mother and she's caring for them, it means that she really can't leave for any kind of extended period. It's a big burden upon her to leave. So I think that's an interesting thing to think about as to whether that's so obviously true or not. Because it's not like he quotes a Gemara. He's going to quote other sources for other elements of this, and then we'll see those and think about them. But that's a piece that one, if there were a posting today, we're revisiting this question. I think that would be an interesting thing to revisit and to rethink about. Also, tirchata merubayu ter mitirchat ba'ala. The annoyance or the weight, the burden of travel to a court case is more for her than it would be for her husband. And this is a gender, I think it's a gender-based comparison. I think he's saying that it's annoying for anybody to have to get on a bus or get in a car for 2 hours to go to a court case, but it's more so for the woman, and therefore the man should be the one to do it. Right, so why do you think that? Ubifrat, he says, Lefi Mashikatov, Gardner Shlomo Kluger, in Shut Elef of the Chashlomo. Shlomo Kluger is an important Rav of the 19th century. He has many different books of response that he called different names, meaning the response that we see are usually from series where you just pick a name, let's say the Chatam Sofer Shut are called Shut Chatam Sofer. You've got volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, volume 4. Shlomo Kluger didn't do it that way. Others didn't do it that way. Rav Kook didn't do it that way. Rav Kook has Orach Mishpat and Da'at Kohen and Mishpat Kohen and other volumes of responsa. So he called sort of every volume of responsa a different name. But that's not the way, and that's what Shlomo Kluger did. So Shlomo Kluger said, Tehaidna chazinan shekoshe tiltula di itita tfei mi de gavra. That nowadays, for a woman to have to wander, to have to go traveling and commuting and this, it's harder on her than it would be on the man. And therefore, we adopt and we go back to the rule that if there's a plaintiff and a defendant, and the plaintiff is a man and the defendant is a woman, we're going to tell the plaintiff, since there was always a rule on the books that the Toveh is Holei Hacharei Nitpa, that was a rule we were going to suspend, because in this case we're going to say it doesn't really apply here since they had their business, as it were, in one city. The fact that she moved shouldn't let her adopt that rule. But since we're now assuming an understanding from Elif Lachashlomo that it's a more of a pain, more of a burden for her than it is for him, so we're going to go back to the original rule that he has to go, that the plaintiff has to go where the defendant is. I'll come back to that in a second. Let's just get a little bit more of the source that he's quoting for his claim, and then we'll think about it. Vayim b'sefer Erech Shai, another sefer, Erech Shai wrote, Maaseh Bali Adi, I had a case in my court, you know, I came to court as a posek, and a woman had said she was making a neder, she could not stay married to her husband, and he kept the neder. Remember that when women make certain kinds of oaths, the Torah gave the husband the right to nullify the oath. In this case, he didn't nullify the oath. He said, fine. He said, good. I want it to be a valid oath, so they can't stay married. So she makes the oath. He verifies the oath. He ratifies the oath. It's going to be an oath forever unless they find the chacham to get rid of the oath. She then moves to another city, and now he wants her to come to a court case. So he wants her to have a din Torah in his city. So she doesn't want to come to the city. She's busy. She's somewhere else, and it's a pain to travel. So they come to the Erech Shai, and he says, the Chorach HaShavti, that since the woman, this is what he originally thought, since the woman has an obligation in Kvod Ba'ala, there is halach on the books. This is another one of these delicate gender topics that we'll have to think about, and the Rav Avdia Yosef is going to think about it too. So the last word is not this one, so don't like shut off the pot, this sheer in anger at what's being said. The Erech Shai says, since she's got an obligation of kavod to her husband, she's an obligation of honor to her husband, even though they're not quite married anymore, because she's taking an oath, she's not going to get any pleasure from him, which means they're going to have to split up unless the oath goes away somehow. So he thought that obligation of kavod, of honor, should mean she should go after where he is. Why does he think that? He thinks that because we do have another case of halacha over there. That is clearly true. If a father and a son get into a Beit Din situation, they get into a court case situation, which is And just to think about it, it's such a sad statement about family dynamics. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm not saying who's at fault at all. But just a husband, a father, and a son have a dispute about something. Let's even assume that it's money, which would be the least of our problems. They have a dispute about money, and it's so intractable between them, they have to go to a Beit Din. It's just a sad situation. But in any case, even though they're having this fight, and the son may be thinking the father is bankrupting him, and the son may be thinking the father is bankrupting him on purpose, nonetheless, the son has an obligation of kavod to the father. He has an obligation of honor to the father. And therefore, the halacha is the son would have to go to wherever it is the father wants to have the court case. I want to be clear, he doesn't have to accept the Beit Din the father chooses, right? Whether or not a particular Beit Din is one you want to argue in front of is a whole different question, because then it might be that you have other options. You might say, I think this Beit Din isn't a qualified Beit Din, or I'm nervous about this Beit Din, I want to do something else. So the specific Beit Din, the specific Dayan, the specific judges who will judge your case is one kind of question, but then the location is another one. So the father's in Vilna and the son's in Berlin, right, and somebody's going to have to take a train to go to the court case, the son's got to do it, and that is part of Kibud Av Va'Em, which is an interesting claim that it's part of Kibud Av by the Erech Shai. And not just by this, I think we passed it. The Ramah says exactly like the Choshen Mishpat. So that's part of interesting about that is that we often say that the obligations of kavod are things like feeding the parent and taking the parent out when the parent needs to get out and finding the parent, make sure the parent is clothed and stuff like that. So here, it's the exact opposite. Instead of the parent having to go out to you, you'd have to go out to the parent. That's part of kavod for the parents, part of the honor that you owe the parent. So if that's part of honor, says the Erech Shai, I would have thought that would be part of the honor that the woman owes her husband. And so, in fact, it's Yehoshua Heschel Ashkenazi, but who had said that he thought exactly that. When a husband and wife have a court case, the woman has to go after the husband because of this covet issue, because this honor issue. And also, this Rav Yehoshua Heschel Ashkenazi had said, this is in Pitkei Tshuva, it was quoted, that we have a Gemara that talks about the fact that Shekasha Tiltula de Gavra Mide'itita. That Gemara Ketubo says that it's harder for a man to travel and commute and to be uprooted from his place to another place than it is for a woman. Remember that before we had said that today we think it's more harder for a woman, but the Gemara said that it's harder for a man. So therefore, in Pitkei Tshuva, this Yehoshua Heschel Ashkenazi thought that was the reason to say the wife should go to where the husband is. But Maharab Ibn Khabib, in a sefer called Get Pashut, had wondered about that. He wondered about that claim that it's harder for a man to travel than for a woman, because there's another Gemara of Metzian Kuf Chet Amid Bet, which talks about the Dina de Bar Metzra. The Dina de Bar Metzra is, if a Jew is selling property, he's obligated to try to first sell, to first offer it to a neighbor. He's offered because the neighbor can then, you know, do various things. If I have a house, you know, let's say you have a flat house, let's say where I grew up in Brooklyn, I think they do it in other places too. You have a house, who's be happy with just one house? What you want to have is two houses so you can knock them down and put them back together. It happens in apartments as well. Let's say you have an apartment, it's a two-bedroom apartment, and you need a third bedroom, and there's an apartment right next door to you, a Jew is selling the apartment. That's the Dina de Bar Metzra. Halachically, the Jew is supposed to offer that apartment for sale to the neighbor first. That doesn't mean they have to take a lower price. It doesn't mean they have to get, you know, they have to lose money on the deal. It just means they have to offer it to the neighbor first. So let's suppose a woman buys a piece of property, buys a piece of land, and all of a sudden the neighbor comes to her and says, you know, the guy never offered it to me, and he can show it, he can prove it, nor the, you know, and the original owner agrees. So theoretically, the halakha of Dina Bar Metzra is that she should let him now take it from her, she should let him have it, and she should go off and buy something else. And if there were a man, that's what we would say. Since there's a Dina Bar Metzra here, that's the Dina Bar Metzra. But the Gemara Bava Metzia says that in the case of a woman, we do not allow them to invoke that rule. And Rashi there explains, Mishim de Isha, Lav Orach Ara Lemedar Ulevakesh Mishish Lo Karkala Matlim Korla, because women in general do not, you know, wander the markets looking for pieces of land to be sold to them. So if she managed to find a way to buy this piece of land, however it happened, we don't want to kick her out and allow the halacha of Dina Bar Metzra to come into play, because kol pekvuda bat melech penima, that's a pasuk of Tehillim, that, and how you interpret it, I once like tried to track it down, and it's not so clear how you interpret it, different people interpret it different ways, but certainly in Rashi's time, certainly Rashi thought kol pekvuda bat melech penima, men, by and large, women want to stay private and be out of the public eye. So if that's true, she found this piece of land to buy, If we take it from her, because the bar mitzvah, the neighbor, has the right to it, then we're forcing her to go start looking for land. How's she going to start looking for land? She's going to have to wander around in the markets or find some ways to connect with people to find land to buy. Since we don't want that, we, the Gemara above Metziah tells us, we don't require her to give the land to the bar mitzvah and get refunded her money for it. If that's true, it sounds like making women wander around is a problem, and then it sounds like her wandering is worse than his wandering, and therefore we should apply that to our court case in the Kaifa and say that she shouldn't have to wander. But we're not done with it yet, because you might have said that that case is different, because there the woman already bought land, and it's the neighbor who's now coming and trying to get her to give it to him, or to sell it to him, basically, but to let him invite his rights as the neighbor. So maybe that's when, since she's already bought the land, we don't want to make her have to go and find new land to buy. But if they're both holding on to something, meaning, let's say in the case of the Haifa case, the wife has her current level of support, the husband has the money that he wants, and he wants, so they're both in possession of their rights, as it were, and so whose wandering is harder on him? There, the Gemara in Ketubos says it's the man. If that were true, the husband is the Tovea, you could say that there's a place to say that she has to go. According to all of that, he says, the Erech Shai, because the Erech Shai ends up saying, though, that it's different, that he thinks that in general her tiltul is worse, and therefore he ends up thinking that since the husband is the Tovea, we said it's usually the case that the plaintiff is the one who has to go, and also he wants her to remove her from her place, meaning she's living in Haifa, and he wants her to come to him. So we could say no, like Rashi said, Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Panima, we prefer to let women live privately if they want to live privately, and therefore we should leave her there. And also, says the Erech Shai, that the Noda Behuda also had said that he didn't invite a woman, he didn't summon a woman to come to a court case in the place of her Baal and her husband, but she can do it in her place for similar kinds of reasons. So if that's just the Rabbi Yosef in our case as well, it would seem like she doesn't have to go to Yerushalayim, because in all of this we can say, Kol Kvuda B'Melech Panima, and not like the Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel Ashkenazi, because, and not only that, but Rabbi Yosef says he thinks the Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel Ashkenazi, who had said that a woman was chayev in her husband's honor, and has to go because of her husband's honor, he thinks here, I think he would agree, because here she's already divorced from him. She's already divorced from him. She no longer has any obligation of honor. So even if you assumed, we're going to question that assumption in a second, but even if you assume that her that a woman, a wife, owes her husband honor, that honor means she would have to go to his place to have a court case, once they're divorced, it's not true. She has no obligation of honor to him anymore at all, and therefore it should be that he has to go to her. Not only that, the Pesachei Tshuva, before I get there, I just want to point out that in reading the Tshuva this way, and he gets to a conclusion that I think a lot of people would like, so they won't bother thinking too much about how he got there, which I personally think is a problem. Not that I have a problem with Rabbi Yosef. I think it's a problem that people are so result-oriented that they let themselves ignore the process of getting the result, but I think the process of getting the result is very important, because that's what the system is all about. And it's that deep streak of, I think it's called legal formalism, that I have in me. But it seems to me that the question then becomes, Rashi had a certain vision of Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Panima. If we follow Rashi in his version of Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Panima in general, then it makes sense to apply it here. But if we live in a time when women, let alone men, act differently in terms of Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Panima, then it's sort of not fair. So in the case of this woman, let's say for a second, the case of this woman, that she really just basically lives with her kids, their little kids, she's just taking care of them, she's a full-time mother, and she really only goes out of the house to the park with them, and that's it. And then she mostly stays in the house, and she's just tznuah, she's so modest and private that she doesn't do any of these things. So then Rabbi Yosef's reasoning and logic work very well, because this is a woman who's living a model of Jewish womanhood that goes back to Rashi, and if you want to say to me that that model of Jewish womanhood is one that we want to protect because we think it's at least a valid model, let alone it could be the Rabbi Yosef thought it was the best model there could be, and we want to protect, so we could say, nowadays, even though the Gemara says, because notice we're saying, even though the Gemara says, Tiltul the Gavra, his having to commute and walk around and wander is harder than hers, and you'd have to look up that Gemara to check it out, we can say, no, we nowadays, following Shlomo Kluger, think that hers is harder, especially because of the issues of Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Panima. That's all fine. But let's suppose that the woman actually found a job. Now, it's not a job enough to support her, so she thinks that she still needs support from the husband. And so I'm not laying any financial blame on anybody else. But let's say she's gotten them a nanny, you know, three 3 days a week for 6 hours a week. And during those times, she's all over the city of Haifa. And she's doing what she's doing. And I'm not, and in a way, let's say that a perfectly Orthodox Jewish woman would do, as many, many Jewish women do that we know. And let's say she even has a job that occasionally has her go on a business trip, and her parents cover those nights, and the kids are fine with that, and it's all good, and the husband has no problem with that. Right? Let's say that's all part of their ordinary lives that you can imagine observant, halachically fine Jewish women doing. So then, but then the reasoning here becomes more of a problem. Because then when the husband wants to have the case in Yerushalayim and she wants to stay in Haifa, it would become a little disingenuous for her to say, oh, but I don't like traveling and this and that. So to me, those are all issues that don't come up in there. It could be they don't come up here because she really was in this traditional mode of motherhood and she was in this traditional mode of really staying very internal and very close to her neighborhood, such that the classical sources that talk about how difficult it is for women to travel and that invoke that site called Kvuda Melech Panima would still be very relevant. But I think those are all issues that come up in concerns and questions as you'd want to apply this to cases that come. So if you look, if somebody were to just read this to Rav Avadia Yosef and then apply it to a court case, you know, if you have two jet-setting business people who got divorced and one's in New York now, one's in California, and the one in California says, it's the woman who's in California, the man is in New York, and the woman in California says, I want him to come to me, and the man in New York wants, I want her to come to me, and they each accumulate 100,000 miles, travel miles every year, and they're all over the place. So I'm not saying it could be that you just say, well, whoever the plaintiff is has to go after the defendant. We've seen that before, and therefore we can see that here. Could be. There could be lots of reasons to go. But to say in that situation would seem to me to be a mistake, because that's not the vision and the version of that particular woman is living in. Then the Pirkei Tshuva says, and by the way, the whole question of she should go after him because she owes him honor, even if they weren't divorced yet, he says, the Pirkei Tshuva says, I don't think that's correct either, right? It was Yehoshua Heshkel Ashkenazi who had said that. The Pirkei Tshuva says, I don't understand, I don't think that he's right, because the case that showed us that was a case of his son after going to his father. But the honor, the kavod, honor is not necessarily the best word for it, the pieties, the practices of service of some sorts that a child owes to a parent are very, very different than a wife to a husband, right? And the Tumim, which is a commentary in Shulchan Aruch, had said that the same way the Knesset Gedolah thought it was true for a son that has to go to a father's place, if you have a student who has a court case, a baited case with a Rebbe, another one of those examples of where you got to imagine that relationship has gone some wrong in some very serious way. If a Rebbe and a student are having a court case about an issue, they so are unable to resolve the difference, they have to go to court over it. That's another example of that. But the Talmud says that would be true for a student after a Rebbe, but only after a Rebbe Muvhak. Only after, so Rebbe Muvhak is a concept we don't have so much anymore. It's somebody who taught you really almost everything you know. It's the majority of your wisdom comes from that person. So that's a Rebbe Muvhak, and that has even more heightened responsibilities of the Talmud to the Rebbe. But it's only that kind of Rebbe that clearly you have to follow and go to his place to have a court case. So that means that if you have a regular student with a regular Rebbe, meaning, you know, spend a year in somebody's shir, he's your Rebbe. And that year is an important year, and he's your Rebbe, and you owe him various kinds of respect, but he's not your Rebbe Muvhak. So, but there's no indication that you'd have to follow that Rebbe to go necessarily to where he was for a court case. So if that's true, that's more similar to what the wife and the husband are like. Meaning, there are situations where we say so-and-so has an obligation of kavod to another person, but that obligation of kavod doesn't always mean as much as you think it means. So the fact that a son has to do something for a parent is not, or a student for a Rebbe Muvhak, doesn't nearly mean that all people who owe kavod for other people have to do it, and so too, that's what we have in the Aruch HaShulchan, that it's only a child to a parent or a student to a Rebbe Muvhak. But other people, and even if there's an obligation of honor of some sort, meaning there's somewhat of an obligation of honor from a younger person to an older person, whoever they are, or an older brother is a good example, a father-in-law, or mother-in-law are good examples that are in the Tshuva. The Rav Yosef is quoting from the Tumim, or a husband with a wife is an example of it, or Talmud Chacham with an Amah Aretz, which is an interesting example because ignoramus is respect, kavod to just Torah scholars who haven't taught them anything, but they owe a certain amount because they have Torah, because they are possessors of Torah. But this issue of where the jurisdiction would happen isn't relevant to that question at all. The go back to the old rule, the plaintiff goes after the nitpa, and it's only the special level of kavod that you owe a parent or a Rebbe Mufak, because there the Gemara says that the honor, the kavod we owe a parent, was compared in psukim, in verses in scripture, to that to which we owe Hashem, right? Kvod, the hukash kvodom, the kvod makom, their honor is sort of compared to in some way the honor. And so too, we say in Pirkei Avot, Mora Rabach Kemora Shemayim, the awe or fear we owe our Rebbeim, our Rebbe Mufak, our set, our majority Rebbe, our teacher who taught us most of what we know. So that's like the fear of heaven, Mashak, in came the Shara Nashim. But it's not true of other people, so that's why the Pirkei Tshuva rejects that whole Mahalach, as it were, the whole way of thinking about it, and that would be vital for us as well, because that means that the woman has no such obligation, even if you wanted to say that despite her being divorced, she owes him some honor still, that level of honor is irrelevant to our discussion here, and Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein says the same thing as he had said in Yibia Omer. But what the Arachshai does give us, says Rav Yosef, is the whole idea of Kokvud about Melch Pnima, that she wants to be at home with her kids, and therefore, when she wants to be at home with her kids, that's such a valid claim that we're not going to require her to go have a court case with her husband as the Maharikid, then we'll follow instead the larger principle of the plaintiff going after the defendant. Then he quotes other sources, because it's not so clear that that rule about the plaintiff having to follow the defendant is so well established that we can apply it in all cases. So he points out that the Vilna Gaon, when he was explaining the halakha, his source was the Gemara in Vavakama that says, Mandekoiv le'keiva azil le'be'asa. It's usually true. We live in a time we still make fun of the fact that doctors don't make house calls anymore. But at the time of the Gemara, the girl was pointing out, they knew that. It's the person who has a pain goes to the doctor to get the pain taken care of. So what's that? How's that relevant here? The person who claims that his money is being lost or being taken, or he wants his money protected, the plaintiff, he's got to go to the doctor. He's got to go to the medical place. He's got to go to the court. That means he has to do the traveling. Was the mishpat also says that wherever the nitpa, the defendant, the person being having a claim lodged against him or her, has a lot of trouble or more pain and trouble and more of a loss than the plaintiff, then the plaintiff has to undertake it. So the Mosheim the Mishpat says it seems to be a question of who's gonna, for whom is it harder? And he also quotes this idea of the one quite like Eva Azlabeas, the person who has the pain, he goes to the house of the doctor. So we've got the more of the trouble is the one. Whoever got more of the troubles, one who's going to have to do less of the traveling, and therefore the plaintiff do it. So for all these reasons, Rav Yosef agrees with the court in Yerushalayim that this judgment, this issue, should be taken up by the court in Haifa, and that the husband and the father is going to have to go and deal with it there in Haifa. And he signs it, and he says that this is a beit din he had with Sal Zolti and Rav Shal Yisraeli, which is quite a court that you had of great Rabbanim coming to this idea that this particular case for the 29th of Iyar was going to be held eventually in Haifa. So it's a husband and wife case, but it's not really a divorce case. It's much more of a jurisdiction case, giving us some rules and some ideas about how we choose when there's a dispute between the parties to a case, where to have that case. But again, with thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Romans, David Hochhauser, I wish you a good day.